Welcome back to the Mastering Your Fertility podcast. This show is all about empowering couples with the knowledge they need to get pregnant, stay pregnant, and have the healthiest baby possible. I'm Kristen Cornett, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and owner of an online fertility practice called Tiny Feet. I work with women and couples all over the world to optimize their health and fertility so they can build the families they've always dreamed of. You can learn more about me on my website at tinyfeet.co. Thanks so much for tuning in with me this week. Before we get started, I want to invite you to check out a couple of free resources that can help you move forward on your fertility journey. First is my free Are You Healthy Enough to Get Pregnant quiz, which will ask you about common symptoms in five areas of health that are foundational to fertility, as well as provide you with some practical tips on how to get started improving your health in each area. Next is the free mini course on how to choose the best prenatal supplements, which walks you through the specific nutrients you need to support your fertility and a healthy pregnancy, and how to find high-quality supplements to meet your needs. And lastly, if you're interested in working with me one-on-one to get to the root cause of your fertility struggles and heal your body through functional medicine, you can schedule a 20-minute phone consult with me. You can find links to each of these free resources through the link in this week's episode description. You're listening to episode 89, and today I'm interviewing naturopath, midwife, and women's health expert, Dr. Jennifer Mercier. We talk about the hands-on therapy she developed to help women struggling with infertility and pelvic health issues. Mercier therapy is a deep pelvic organ visceral manipulation technique that can help restore normal anatomy and blood flow in the pelvis. This can have a profound effect on menstrual cycle health, ovarian function, and hormone production, which encompass many of the underlying causes of trouble conceiving. Clinically, Mercier therapy has been shown to be effective in addressing a huge variety of fertility and pelvic health issues, including endometriosis, diminished ovarian reserve, luteal phase defect, PCOS, and recurrent miscarriage. It can either be used as a standalone therapy or in preparation for IUI and IVF, and it's proven incredibly successful in achieving pregnancy, even in difficult cases. So in this episode, you'll hear from Dr. Mercier about what women need to know about conventional fertility treatment options that are often not shared by doctors, what led her to the creation of Mercier therapy as a possible solution to fertility struggles, how Mercier therapy works and the specific issues or conditions it can help address, Mercier therapy success rates in comparison to mainstream fertility treatments and how it can also be used in preparation for IUI or IVF, and how to find a practitioner trained in Mercier therapy if you're interested in exploring it yourself. So I'll go ahead and introduce you to Dr. Mercier and we'll jump right in. Founder and creator of Mercier Therapy, Jennifer Mercier has been in practice for 20 years and serves women with primary and secondary infertility, pelvic pain, and surgical recovery. Many of the women that consult Dr. Mercier's expertise have been diagnosed with endometriosis, PCOS, scar tissue, fibroids, blocked tubes, premature ovarian failure, diminished ovarian reserve, advanced age, and sex hormone or thyroid imbalances. Mercier Therapy is a deep pelvic organ visceral manipulation done via the abdomen. You can find links to Dr. Mercier's website, her practice, and her fertility documentary through the link in this week's episode description. Enjoy the interview. All right, welcome, Dr. Jennifer Mercier. Thank you so much for joining me today on Mastering Your Fertility. I'm very excited to have you here.
Thanks, Kristen. I'm excited to be here. I appreciate you asking me to be a part of your podcast.
Absolutely. I think that this is an important thing for more women to be aware of, is this unique therapy that you've developed. But before we jump into that, why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your background and what brought you into women's health and fertility work?
Sure. So really my own female health, when I was younger, 23 to 26, I had a lot of pelvic pain and I didn't know what it was. And so that kind of set me in motion to find a good solution to help myself. But then in turn, I was able to help other women too with the end goal. But just backing up slightly, I was pre-med undergrad. But while I was pre-med, I worked for the largest reproductive endocrinology clinic in the state of Illinois at the time, which was the Center for Human Reproduction. And at 19, I was trained how to be a clinician in the reproductive clinic. So I was doing inseminations pap smears, endometrial biopsies. I was preparing the semen for IUI. I was also doing all the lab draws and ultrasounds, pelvic ultrasounds. I was assisting on HSGs and egg retrieval, embryo transfer. So I really got a good working knowledge of what reproductive endocrinology and fertility medicine was. And that was priceless for where I am today, because it's a language all of its own, and I speak that language. So when you have a woman coming in and she's talking about a hysterosalpingogram and a tubal blockage because of a salpingitis, you know, I speak that language. And I think that's very comforting to the women that seek out my therapy. Otherwise, it's just another integrative therapy, blanket, you know, generalized therapy for women. And I want it to be very individual. So at the end of my undergrad, my last year, I went to the Chicago School of Massage Therapy for that program and finished up with the knowledge of wanting to become a doula and then eventually perhaps a midwife. And then I took the entrance exam for med school, and I did get in. I got into a foreign medical school in the Caribbean because I thought that would be way more exciting, and the tuition was right. So I thought, okay, away I go. And then God stepped in and said, no, I think you just need to be a midwife. And so that's what I did, all the while studying a naturopathic medicine and PhD program as a dual program. And then I just practiced. I was a midwife, a home birth midwife for 12 years, and studied with some of the greatest midwives in our country to learn all about midwifery and how to start your own home birth midwifery practice. And that's how I got my start. I think the fact that I had a very well-versed, well-rounded beginning in school from knowing the anatomy very intimately in it from a massage therapy perspective, and then going on and becoming a midwife and learning how to, you know, get this object out of this object, meaning the baby out of the pelvis. And it's really, it becomes physics. It's a physics situation when you've got one object trying to fit through another object. And so all of that knowledge then carried through when I developed Mercier therapy. So my own pelvic pain, my knowledge as a midwife and my knowledge as a naturopath all culminated together to help me birth Mercier therapy.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's very unique and something that I feel like someone with your credentials would have a very unique perspective and ability to develop, because there aren't that many people that have that kind of collection of different types of training.
I agree. And, you know, so when people come to take the training with me, I've got a very diverse background of professionals that have the interest. And it's really just been very special learning from them as they learn from me. Right. So it's just been the coolest thing to watch unfold.
Yeah, I bet it has been. So let's step back for a second and talk about what the typical options for women struggling with their fertility are. You know, I think we kind of view IVF as like the gold standard of fertility treatment in this country. And I think a lot of women think, oh, if I can't get pregnant, I'll just do IVF and I'll definitely get a baby that way. So what would you say are some of the things that women who might be thinking about going down that route need to know about conventional treatment, like about success rates, about side effects, about possible long-term health implications that haven't been studied well, not to scare people, but just to be informative?
Certainly. Yeah. And I always guide women to go with what's on their heart. However, let me just back up to what you first asked me, and you said what options are available from a conventional standpoint. Typically, an OBGYN or a midwife or a nurse practitioner, PA, would start out a woman on some Clomid. Clomid is an ovulation induction medication, but there's caveats here. This is an anti-estrogenic medication that thins out the endometrium and creates poor fertile mucus in the vaginal environment, both making it inhospitable for an embryo to even become and also to implant. So those are typically the cycles that are done first. There's another drug called letrozole or Femara, and this is also estrogen inhibiting, but not quite as intensely as Clomid inhibits the estrogen production. And keep in mind, we need a good, robust amount of estrogen to even grow a follicle to begin with. And then once there's conception, you've got an embryo there and the vital organs are forming first and foremost, the brain, the spinal cord, the heart. All three of those entities thrive off of robust estrogen components. And if they're missing, you may get a flicker of a heartbeat and then a miscarriage happens. So Clomid and Femara are not my favorites and they very rarely work. And when they do, there is a high risk of multiples as well.
Right.
Typically then after you can prove that somebody has failed these cycles, and I hate to say it that way, but that's exactly how it is. If they've failed these cycles, no pregnancy occurs or you've had miscarriages, the typical step is to move into IVF. Now there is a middle ground there and it's an injectable FSH with an HCG trigger of ovulation and either timed intercourse based on what the semen analysis is telling us or an insemination. And then you just wait and see what that kind of cycle brings. And I really am in favor of that because it's not decoupling the couple. I feel like we need to keep the couple together in making the baby because then it's just going to give a stronger bond during the pregnancy and the birth and the parenting. I really like that cycle. So then there's IVF. And most clinics are jumping into IVF right away. And here's the truth. IVF makes the clinic a lot of money. And I'm not saying that's why they do this, okay? IVF is an absolute miracle and gift. For people that are medically, in need medically to have that kind of cycle. So here we go, like with a tubal factor, either the tubes are blocked or they're missing. The tubes have been missing, they're gone, they've been surgically removed, or they don't communicate with the uterus. Those are reasons to do IVF. Or if there's an issue with the partner's sperm and the partner needs a testicular extraction to remove the sperm because there's none in the ejaculate, that's a good reason to do IVF. If there is a genetic component on both sides that are going to predispose this embryo to, say, cystic fibrosis from both mom and dad positive carriers, that could be a fatal outcome. So there is a time and place for IVF, but certainly not as much as we're doing it. There's a 60%, a group of 60% of unknown fertility challenges. And when you look at that and you're like, okay, well, it's unknown. So what are we dealing with? Oh, we don't really know. So let's just go to IVF. That's, in my opinion, that's not the right way to go. And the right way is the right way for somebody. But in my opinion, I don't think we need to jump into such a heavy protocol right away. I think we can just take a little step back, maybe try to investigate a bit further, do Mercier therapy, and just wait, or do acupuncture, or do whatever is on your heart to try. But certainly, I call IVF driving a thumbtack with a sledgehammer. You just wouldn't do that.
Yes, that's true, and I agree with that. And the amount of people that are in that unknown category, even if they have a diagnosis, even if they have something like endometriosis, that doesn't always explain why someone isn't getting pregnant. It's a diagnosis that I think a lot of women are put in that bucket and it's assumed that that's the reason that they're not conceiving. But I think a lot of those diagnoses are still unexplained to a large degree. And then there's the probability of actually coming out of a cycle with a child, and it's lower than a lot of people think it is. So talk a little bit about the success rates.
Yeah, so IVF success rates, I'm going to tell you the most preliminary data is up on SART.org, and you can look at them for yourself, the numbers. When I worked for the fertility clinic, we were part of the SART project. So, and this is when SART was just getting going, which is the Society of Assisted Reproductive Technology, just so you know. We were held to a standard where we would have to keep track of each woman, each age group, how many follicles were maturing during the cycle, how many were retrieved, how many actually became embryos, and how many were transferred. And then we had to keep pregnancy outcomes as well. And so the pregnancy rate and the take-home baby rate are completely different. So back then is pretty, like in the early 90s, is pretty much what's going on right now. The success rates are really not much different. The only things that are different are the drugs, and there are more of them. So that's a bit disconcerting to me because nobody's really looked at the outcome, the long-term outcome data. My son, of course, is in the background.
It happens.
So if you're looking at the data, you're looking at about a 26 to 29% pregnancy rate, and then a 23% take-home baby rate. And that's on IVF cycles across the board. I did my own study, and I found that out of my cohort group, there was a 50% increase, I'm sorry, a 30% increase in all primary IVF cycles. So for women going into IVF, just going into IVF for their first cycle, they've got about a 30% chance on average of becoming pregnant. With doing Mercier therapy as a preparation, it was a 50% chance of becoming pregnant on the first cycle.
Wow, that's a significant difference.
It is, because we're going in there and we're moving organs in all different directions to increase mobility and blood flow. And it's like turning a light switch on to the pelvic organs and just optimizing their overall function. And it's really interesting too, because most women end up getting pregnant before they go to IVF. And they're like, what did you do? Like, yeah. Actually, it's really simple. And we didn't put your body into any risky position as far as, you know, injecting you with medication or giving you oral medication. So again, it's needed for some cases, but it's not needed for every case.
Certainly not. I would definitely agree with that. And I don't think a lot of people who are just coming to the idea of potentially embarking on an IVF cycle really understand how invasive and potentially risky this is. I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen. I don't think there's been enough study on what the long-term health implications are for reproductive functioning and, you know, the risk of super ovulating someone or causing all of these follicles to develop all at once. There's a lot there that we don't know. And we get a short-term outcome of hopefully if you're in that, you know, 29% or so of people that are successful, you have that opportunity to come away with this with a baby. But there are some women that are going through 2, 3, 5, 10 IVF cycles. What's the impact of that? You know, we don't really know.
We don't really know. And I looked up some data several years ago when I was producing my film. And it looked like, nobody's really doing the studies to show long-term outcome, but there was a post in Resolve. Are you familiar with Resolve? It's a group, the support group. Yeah. So there was a small study done, and don't ask me to cite it. This was so long ago, I don't even remember, but I do remember the outcome. And there were out of the group of women, half of them had done some sort of reproductive technology, so ART, IVF, and the other half had not, but they were predisposed genetically to an ovarian cancer. And it showed that the outcome of these two groups of women, the women that underwent ART were at a higher risk for ovarian cancer, and more of them were showing signs of ovarian cancer, like elevated CA125 blood tests. Mm-hmm. And the other women that had maybe a maternal, like a mom or an aunt with ovarian cancer, these ladies were showing way less signs of ovarian cancer than the women that had done IVF. Mm. So someone needs to do the study, but here it is. They're not doing the study because Nobody really has the money to do it, and it's not going to be self-funded. It's not going to be a self-funded study. Nobody has the time or the money to do that. And the drug companies certainly aren't going to do it because it takes away from their bottom line. And I'm not, you know, wanting to sound like I'm being heartless here, but truly, reproductive endocrinology is a $6 billion institute, and it just keeps growing every single year, and there are so many failures, and these women are leaving these cycles so broken that there's got to be a better answer. And that's exactly in part why I created the Share Journey Fertility Program.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this amazing alternative that you've developed and what different aspects of your past and training that you incorporated into this therapy and kind of how it's being used now to help women with their fertility. Like, what's the goal of Mercier Therapy?
Yeah, the goal of Mercier Therapy, because it's a deep pelvic organ visceral manipulation, is to increase organ mobility and blood flow into the pelvis. And when you do that in any part of the body, whether it be your shoulder joint, your knee joint, your hip joint, your musculature, you're going to optimize the overall function. So that's the goal. We want to get in there and move things around. And it was so interesting, just as a little aside, I had a new patient last week and she was telling me that her gynecologist was saying, Mercier Therapy is amazing because even when I go in with a laparoscope to a surgical belly and I touch the organs with the scope, sometimes that's all it needs, all the organs need to resume their blood flow and women get pregnant. Yeah. So I thought, wow, that's really cool that this physician is recognizing that just by touching the organs when he's in there operating, it can start a process. And I love that. And that's what I work to do, is just to start to initiate a process of wellness, to allow these organs to move against each other, to breathe in essence. In my film, I interviewed Tom Myers, who is a textbook author. He's like the king of fascia. And he was talking about in the film, how whenever you take an inhale and exhale, these organs inside of us have to move against each other. And that initiates the process of all of them working together. It's like a domino effect. So I like to also use the example of the trees outside. If the breeze doesn't blow against the leaves and the leaves don't blow against each other, they're not making chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is the essence of life of the tree. So everything has to be moving. And if it's not moving, it's slowly losing its life.
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting. And I think a lot of people don't understand how much of an impact you can have just by simply increasing the blood flow to an area in the body. But the blood is like the superhighway of what delivers nutrients, what allows hormones to move back and forth, the immune system and the components that are involved in like, regulating inflammation. All of these things use the blood as a highway. And so when we think about the impact that can have on the functioning of the reproductive organs, it's pretty profound, actually. You know, a simple really concept with a really profound effect.
Very much so. I am all about keeping it simple and ramping it up to much higher guns if we need something more. But we don't need a blast injury. We need something that's gentle so that your body can adapt to it. And the Shared Journey Fertility Program has done some amazing things. And I have stage 4 endometriosis, and I'd had 3 surgeries, and I was told I needed IVF. And I told my surgeon, who I'd known from my early Center for Human Reproduction days when we worked together, that I wasn't going to do IVF. And he said, well, you're going to need to. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. And I showed up in his office pregnant.
Right.
So he's like, what did you do? And I said, I don't know, just my own therapy. My students worked on me and that's just what happened. So it was pretty awesome. I don't think endometriosis is a death sentence for your fertility.
I agree.
A lot of women have endometriosis. Let's just work through it. You know, let's manage it and work through it. And certainly suppressing someone with Lupron or birth control pills is not, it's not an advantageous way to go about managing that kind of issue, because once you get off of the drugs, the endometriosis will still be there. Right. And it will come back in its bold forces, and it's not going to go away. So let's just manage it and work through it and monitor your cycles and get everything moving in there and just, take the gentle approach, because your body certainly is in turmoil when you've got endometriosis.
Definitely. And, endo is definitely one of the things that can cause adhesion and restrict movement in the pelvic organs and, cause inflammation. But, you know, I think a lot of what we're seeing too now with distortion of internal anatomy has a lot to do with just how we live our lives now. You know, we don't get as much movement, and even people who exercise on a regular basis still spend a lot of their day sedentary if they're working in an office environment. And, you know, a lot of us have bad posture. We're not like sitting properly and allowing for proper alignment. And so, and then there's, you know, the pelvic or abdominal surgery that can cause adhesion and, you know, result in some of this lack of movement and lack of blood flow. So there are a lot of things that I think can predispose to this being a very successful and helpful therapy for fertility issues and restoring that whole area to its proper function.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen it work miracles and all sorts of magic before. And I mean, I have a woman right now, she's adorable. She's pregnant with number 6.
Wow.
And I know she came to see me. She had a non-myomeningocele spina bifida. And the way that they knew that at birth is she has a patch of hair at the base of her spine. And then when it became time for her to get pregnant and they just weren't getting pregnant, she's 26, not getting pregnant. So, you know, you have to wonder. Right. So the reproductive endocrinologist went in and did a hysterosalpingogram, and the dye forced up into the uterine cavity and stopped. That was it. There no tubal communication at all. And her uterus was also unicornuate, so one horn only. And again, they tried to force the dye and it didn't happen. So she does have two tubes. She does have two ovaries, but the tubes and the ovaries don't communicate with the uterus. So there's a problem. She goes into IVF. She has a fresh transfer, ends up with a son, freezes the rest of her embryos, does an FET, frozen embryo transfer, 2 years later, ends up with a daughter. And then I worked on her again because she was complaining of suprapubic pain after she had delivered her daughter. And then she got pregnant on her own.
Wow.
I know. I wish our listeners could see our faces right now.
I know. That's pretty incredible.
It was quite remarkable. So this couple then did two more frozen embryo transfers. Got two little boys from the frozens. And then she just came to me recently. She wanted to do the last FET because they don't want to dispose of their embryos. They don't want to donate them. They don't want them discarded. They want them transferred. I understand completely. So she came in. She was having some pelvic pain. I worked on her. We prepared her with 6 sessions to go into her FET for July. Well, they called me at the beginning of July. They're like,
we're pregnant.
I'm pregnant.
That's fantastic. That's so amazing. And you know, that would be a problem. That would be a situation where you would be told that there was medically a necessity to go through IVF, that there was no other option. And so, you know, you were talking at the beginning about tubal factor issues being one of the things that would tell you that IVF was medically necessary. But, you know, as I was looking into Mercier therapy a little bit more, and I was kind of reading on your website and looking at some of the conditions that Mercier therapy can help with and improve, you know, blocked tubes is one of those things, which I think is really interesting. What are some of the other conditions that you're seeing clinical success with from a fertility perspective?
PCOS. That's a big one. PCOS, yeah. Endometriosis, tubal factor, male factor, fertility challenges. I'm seeing all these men lately that have increased estradiol levels, decreased testosterone levels. And so when they're aromatasing this high level of estradiol and their testosterone is not well supported, we've got some male factor issues on the semen analysis. But here's what we don't do. We don't give a man who's trying to get his wife pregnant testosterone, because then you shut down the production of testosterone in the testicles and wipe out all the sperm production. So what I've been doing is 100 milligrams of DHEA along with pregnenolone 50 milligrams a day and vitamin C to help improve sperm production as opposed to just moving in with testosterone. Because we got to help these guys somehow. You know, they're just not feeling good. They're not able to have or achieve an erection, or, you know, so it's multifaceted with men too. That's why I really like to work with the couple and make sure that we're not missing any pieces of the puzzle from the perspective of both partners. So, yeah.
Well, and that's something that I think is an issue in conventional treatment as well, is focusing all of the effort and investigation on the woman doing just like a basic semen analysis and saying, oh, you're fine. You know, we don't really look into anything any deeper for the male any more than we do for the female. Right. And I think that there are just a lot of health factors in general, simple things, obvious things that aren't being discussed in the fertility clinic. I was just working with a couple and found out that, you know, they were about to go through IVF, and I had met with her, and then she was like, oh, I want my husband to see you. And I found out in that appointment that they were about to go through IVF and he was still smoking. And I'm like, so that needs to change. You know, that's one of those things where it's like, that should have been addressed with the fertility doctor before any discussion of fertility treatment was happening, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because smoking alone is going to decrease sperm production and can inhibit motility and overall counts. Right. So, right. I often wonder like what's going on beyond the cookie cutter basic infertility evaluation and meet up with the fertility specialist. What's going on? Like, is anybody addressing nutrition? Is anybody addressing the social aspect, the drinking alcohol and the cigarette smoking? Is anybody looking further? And what I've come to the conclusion is, like, a lot of these reproductive endocrinology clinics will give a sheet that says, do this, 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 and this, and this. And people probably take that and they're like, oh, thank God they're going to get me pregnant.
Right.
You know, and they just take the sheet and toss it aside because they're not going to comply with that. They're already complying with a heavy schedule of inject this at this time and do this at this time, show up for this appointment at this time and do this. And now we're going to do a saline sano. Now we're going to do this and this and this and this and this. And it's just, it becomes overwhelming. So what I tell women and men when they come into my office is you don't have to follow any certain plan. Okay. Because I'm looking for compliance here. Just eat as organic as possible. If it's not organic, it's probably not worth putting in your mouth. So organic is great. And then it usually like a while ago, people are saying, well, it's so expensive to eat organic. And I'm like, and it's so expensive to be sick. So
and you're also about to spend 15 plus on, you know, $1,000 on fertility treatment. So,
exactly.
you might as well spring for organic and give yourself the best possible chance if you're already going to go there. And I think money in a lot of ways is about priorities too. And it's also about understanding why something is important. And that is where conventional practitioners are not trained to educate people on that, because it's not any training that they receive in their education.
Right. Right. And not for lack of trying either. I mean, I'm not trying to be harsh on them, because I know all the reproductive endocrinologists in my area and they all have good intentions, but to their credit, I mean, like, they're just so busy.
Right.
You know, not like I'm not, but I do take the extra time, and that's probably where, you know, they could send their patients to me or to you, and we can emphasize that portion of care and have the time to be able to do that, as opposed to, you know, they're trying their very best, but they also have great nurses too, that yeah. can implement, you know, the drug schedule and the procedure schedule. But there's a reproductive endocrinologist here close to me, and I'm emailing him almost daily because we have mutual patients, but this guy works Monday to Sunday from like 5 or 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. Like, he's always in the office. So I just wonder, like, maybe if you didn't do that kind of schedule, you could maybe touch on some more really important things to help prepare your patients for what they're going to be enduring. Because I'm telling you, when I worked at the fertility clinic, and I don't think it's much different today, women would walk in and they would drop all the money that they had and just say, let's just do this. And then they hand over their fertility to a clinic, to a group of professionals to manage, and they take themselves out of the equation altogether. That could be kind of a dangerous position, because then once they become pregnant,
right,
you know, then they have really very little sense of self and what it took to get them there. It's like they're almost numb because it's taken so much out of them. I don't know. Have you seen the documentary Vegas Baby?
I have not.
Okay, so it was on Netflix, but I would ask you to watch it, and you can ask your people to watch it too that may be considering IVF. You'd have to stream it now on their own website, but it's called Vegas Baby, and it's Dr. Jeffrey Scherer, who owned a reproductive endocrinology and fertility clinic in Arizona, and he offered up a free IVF package for the couple that sent in the best video.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm just going to leave it there, and I encourage you to watch it because it really paints the picture, a true picture of what IVF looks like. And there you have it.
Well, that is good for anybody who's considering that to know, is to have a realistic understanding of what you should be expecting when you decide to go that route. And, you know, it's not as if we're necessarily trying to discourage people from going that route, because this, what we're talking about here, I mean, what I do as a functional medicine practitioner, what you do in your practice, I mean, these can be supportive therapies to help somebody get ready for that cycle and increase the probability of it being successful, like what you were discussing with what you're seeing clinically and success rates of people who are just going through IVF versus people that are doing Mercier therapy before they seek out IVF or another form of ART. So I think it's important to know that these things can be used together. It doesn't have to be one or the other, but it's certainly worth exploring other alternatives prior to going that route, just because it is so invasive and intense and you are exposing yourself to a lot of medication. I was really surprised actually to hear you say that success rates are very similar to what they were in, like, what did you say, the late 90s?
Early 90s.
So we're using a lot more medication, very intense medication, but we're not really seeing a big difference in the success rates that we're getting. And I guess I didn't know that. I know what the current ones are, but I didn't know that comparison to the early 90s was like that it was similar.
Yeah. And we were using much stronger drugs back then and less of them. So I remember Pergonol and Metrodin, these two drugs that we predominantly used for IVF cycles. Now we're using, you know, Ganirelix and Follistim and Gonal F and, you know, HCG. And we did use HCG back then, but we were using some pretty heavy hitters, but there were less meds. And now we're doing cocktails for miscarriage protocols, and so we're using blood thinners and Pepcid and all of these different things. And I think we're really, really creating a circus, because once the body is pregnant and you stop all of those meds, I don't know, what's the repercussion? I just wonder. And I'm really glad that women are getting pregnant from these cycles. I really, truly, genuinely am grateful for these cycles, but I know that there's a different way.
Right. And it's ideally for the woman, you know, less intervention is better, right? Like, if you don't need that much, if you don't need all of those drugs to get pregnant, why do it?
Right. Right. Well, I think we're also too on an unrealistic timeline. You know, I want to be pregnant here so I can have the baby there. And it's like, that's kind of a dangerous position. You know, that's a dangerous position. You want to try and get pregnant each cycle. And whenever it happens, it happens. It's not on your timeline. It's when your body is ready. It's when your body is ready. We can't be forcing these things.
Well, and I think timeline for a lot of women has to do with their fears around age as well.
Yeah.
And of course, age is an important factor in fertility. It does decline as we age. But I think that there is a little bit more of that panic factor when you're going the conventional route, and doctors, they want to give you the best possible opportunity at success. And they know, based on what they see in their clinics, that women who are over 35, their success rates go down sharply with, you know, each passing year. And so I think women are often told, like, you don't have time to wait. You don't have time to do something else. And I think that can be a little bit discouraging for couples seeking out alternatives.
I agree. And I always like to share my story with women that are over that 35 mark. I actually was pregnant for the first time in my life at 35 with my husband, and then lost that baby. And it took like a year and a half for me to get pregnant again. And I had my daughter when I was 37. And then I had three losses between my daughter and my son. So my son was my seventh pregnancy, and I was almost 41 when I gave birth to him. And I have stage 4 endometriosis and Hashimoto's thyroid disease. So I think that if you can just manage on your own the symptoms and the antibodies for Hashimoto's and the pain from endometriosis, and just be aware of what your own body is capable of doing by monitoring your cycles. I think you'll be all the wiser, because you can look back and say, oh, I got pregnant that cycle. How is that different? Yeah. And it's really empowering to look at what your body's capable of doing on its own. So I also love using bioidentical hormones to support a cycle. Right. I think it's so gentle and wonderful. And I'm so grateful for these bioidenticals that I think we just have it all at our fingertips, and we're able to, like you, well-versed practitioner, me, well-versed practitioner with lots of experience as well. Women need to be, couples need to be coming to visit us first, I believe. That's my thing. Because most women come to see me after they've failed multiple medical attempts. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why do we put so much faith into medicine when the numbers just aren't good? They're not good. So I don't know. I think in general, we put a lot of faith into medicine, and thank God we have it. But I think we also can do more harm than good.
Yeah. I mean, I think most of us are just, we're educated to believe that those are the only options available. You know, that's kind of how it's always been. It's like, you're sick or you have a problem and you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you what to do. And I mean, I didn't know that alternative therapies existed. I think my mom was probably the first person to seek out a naturopath at some point when she was just desperate. You know, she was trying to figure out what was going on with her and she just could not get answers. And so she went that route out of desperation, but it was many years before I thought that there was any legitimacy to that direction. And then the same for me, right? Like, you get to a point where you're just not getting anywhere conventionally. And, you know, for me, it was anxiety and debilitating panic disorder when I was in business school, going that very traditional, like, I'm going to go be a financial analyst route. And I did that for a couple of years, but it was really out of desperation to try to figure out what was going on with me that I made kind of a radical change to my diet and experienced healing. And then it was like, oh, the door is open. And then you just go down the rabbit hole a little further and a little further. And it was like, I'm going to become a nutritionist and I'm going to do all this training in functional medicine. And that's how you get there. But you know, something, there has to be like a catalyst. And oh, I hope for a lot of these couples that fertility is that catalyst that tells them, like, hey, now is a good time to seek out something different and kind of learn a different way to be healthy and respect the fact that fertility is really that reflection of your overall health.
Agree. And I think that to your point, if we look at environmentally what we're contending with on a daily basis, I'm sure you guys are far better out in Oregon than we are here in Illinois, but we try. But you're also on a coast where you've got fresh air from the sea. And so we don't necessarily have that. I don't think our pollution is crazy, but I do think that what we do have across the board in this country is some volatile chemicals that are being sprayed, you know, on our lawn, on our shrubs, on everything. And that just becomes dangerous for us. And we're breathing this in. How can that not inhibit our fertility?
Right.
The chemicals in food. And I go over this in my fertility certification course. There's a whole list of items that we talk about and how it can impact your fertility and cause hormonal disruption or hormonal chaos. And if our endocrine system, if our HPA axis isn't following a circadian rhythm and it's all talking to each other, then we've got a glitch in the system. We've got a glitch in the system and we've got a kink in the hose. And so something needs to change. And if we're not willing to move into that change and we just want to go ahead and force the situation, the outcome could be very detrimental.
Yeah. And I think to your point about environmental toxicity, I mean, there's so much research on that too, about how that impacts the fertility process and the fact that that's not necessarily a point of education that a lot of people are gaining access to earlier on in their fertility journey is really unfortunate, because right. Those are fairly easy things to do. I mean, yes, there are going to be some products that you might have to switch out, and the natural alternatives will be a little bit more expensive. But once again, a drop in the bucket when you compare the impact that can have on you, and of course the cost of doing a conventional treatment. I mean, doing just clearing out your cleaning products and switching over your personal care products, and you know, maybe having like an air filter or something for your home if you live in an area where there's a lot of pollution. I mean, those are small relatively low investment changes that you can make that can have a significant impact on how 100%. This process goes for you.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. That's why I really love what I do, as I'm sure I speak for you as well, and you love what you do, but you want to be a collaborative partner with your client.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to just take it all away from them and do it on your own and say, oh, hey, take this, and then just leave them to their own defenses. I mean, I'm constantly checking in with my ladies asking, hey, did you follow up with this thyroid panel? Hey, did you get your Armour thyroid dose corrected? Did you do the repeat HSG? How about that hysterosalpingogram? Did you follow up? What about the hysteroscopy to remove the polyp? Like, are you doing these things? And it's a nice dialogue of keeping people in check, you know, and keeping them to their own word. And yes, I'm going to do this. Yes, I'm going to do that. Okay, you said you were going to do it. So I'm going to follow up with you and check in on you to make sure that you're just, you know, you're following your own course. Yeah. But Sheer Journey Fertility Program is a year long. It's 6 sessions of Mercier therapy, and they're 1 hour each. And if you have endometriosis, I always add in more because you're going to need maintenance sessions. But during that time, during the time of the 6 sessions, or if someone flies in to see me and we do 4 days of intensive therapy, 6 hours over 4 days, I will tell them to just kind of drop the reins at that point and just be still with your plan at that point. And then I give them a journal and I teach them how I want them to monitor their cycle. Not charting or taking temperatures necessarily, but being aware of fertile mucus and what that looks like. And then also being aware of, did they have an LH surge? And so we monitor together for up to a year. And once that year is over, usually we have a pregnancy.
Yeah.
And if we don't, you know, I'm encouraging women to come in and follow up with me and to talk with me about their journal, and it works out really nicely. So it's a 1-year program, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, and you have quite the success rate for it as well. And you actually have had an ongoing study that you've been doing in your practice about success rates within what, a year of completing Mercier therapy, just the 6 weeks or like the full year program?
I'm sorry, say again.
So the success rate, the 83% that you've achieved with this therapy, is that just after the 6 sessions, or is that like after completing the full year of the shared fertility program?
No, I usually see pregnancies within 3 to 6 months after finishing. Some of them are very soon after, like right after, or some of them are even during. Wow. The treatments. Yeah. So that's, yeah, I still have the same success rate as when I wrote the study that was published in Midwifery Today in 2013, it's 83%. And it's no joke. And some people are like, well, what? No, come on. I'm like, oh, it just is. It just is.
So people can fly in and see you. And, you know, if they're not local to Illinois, they can do, you said, 4 days of intensive therapy where they do 6 hours of the Mercier therapy over the course of 4 days. But you also have been training people to use this therapy. You probably have practitioners like all over the world that are trained to do this now.
34 states and 16 countries.
Wow. Very impressive. Yeah. So how does someone find a Mercier therapy practitioner to work with?
Yeah, so they go to the MerciertTherapy.com website, and then it says find a practitioner, and that email will go to my assistant, Natalie, and Natalie will email back all the people in their area.
Okay, great. Yeah, I did that myself, and I was really excited to find somebody local here in Portland that can do it. It's great to have local people to refer to for all different kinds of modalities that can be helpful.
Agree. Yeah, agree. And my goal is to get as many of them out there as possible. When they come to take my training, I always tell them this is one big family. Anything I do for everybody else too. I just had a beautiful brochure created for the Shared Journey Fertility Program, not just for me, but for everybody else to be able to purchase them as well, because my goal is consistency. If they see me, I want them to have the same experience seeing someone that I've trained.
Right.
And I really believe in consistency and following that, because otherwise, you know, you've got people doing what they want to do. And if I ever call for data for a study and they want to be published in a study, then it's got to be the true raw data. It can't be, we did this and this and this and this and this. It's just got to be, okay, this is the criteria, and this is the data I need from you. So I really, so I train a lot of chiropractors, a lot of oriental medicine providers as well. And they do their own thing aside from Mercier therapy, which is completely fine. But again, if you want to participate in any kind of study, you've got to have that raw data, that you've got to be able to follow the criteria. So I'm very specific about that because I've worked very hard to get where I am. I'm actually working on my second book and it's almost finished. I'm kind of dragging my feet a little bit in the editing stage because I thought I'll release it in 2020. And then I'm like, no, I'll release it in 2021. Yeah. This year's been kind of a circus. So I'm like, okay, 2021 will be a much better time. And I think that you'll be very impressed with the new book. My first book was a little bit sleepy because it was my first book, you know, and I let it go out of print because the second one will be far better. And I promise you that.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And you also have a film that you produce yes. that talks more about that. So hopefully people have learned a lot from this podcast episode, but if they want to dig in a little bit more, tell us about the film and where they can access that.
Yeah. The film is on Amazon, on iTunes, on Food Matters TV. So now you can rent it for $2.99 on Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free. But it's really an educational documentary. I didn't make it to become a millionaire. I made it to spread the knowledge to people that want to know more about Mercier therapy, listen to some pretty in-depth cases and how they succeeded in becoming pregnant. It's called Fertility, the Shared Journey with Mercier Therapy. And I actually just watched it again the other day and I hadn't watched it in a while. And I thought, oh my gosh, Jenny, you put too much blue eyeshadow on for your interview.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, you know, anytime you look back at your past work, you'll have something critical to say about it.
I know. I'm like, oh my gosh, Jenny. But you know what? It was the information in the film was so good. And I just look at the families that participated in the film. I'm so grateful and thankful for them. And their stories are just precious. And yeah, so take a look at the film. You know, it's an hour and 20 minutes feature length film. It was my first job as a producer director, so I can at least add that to my repertoire. Yes. I would definitely make another film. It was really fun, but documentaries are great for getting information across to the masses, and I just love it.
Yeah, I agree. I just watched it before this interview. So, and I had actually watched it a few months ago when I was thinking about asking you on to be interviewed because I like to be familiar with the work of the people that I ask onto the podcast.
Yeah, sure.
So last question, share whatever your closing pieces of advice, your pearls of wisdom, whatever you want the takeaway from this interview to be for couples who are struggling with their fertility. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say you need to trust your gut. Go with what feels best to you and look at different options other than just medical right out of the gate. You don't need to force your body to do something it's clearly not ready to do. Maybe you have an issue with your relationship that you need to work out first. Maybe there is something physical that needs to be addressed, whether it be a financial, emotional, relational, whatever it is issue. Come see one of us, you know, either you, Kristen, or me, and we can talk about it and find the best way to take care of you so that your outcome is exactly what you're seeking.
Fantastic advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Jenny, for being on today. I really appreciate your time and your expertise and this amazing therapy that you have put out into the world. And I hope listeners have found this informative and inspiring as well.
Thank you, Kristen. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.